Coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, we had a head-to-head at St. Andrews and potentially a farewell to Tiger. We'll discuss, plus a little bit of live tour drama to update from the past week in golf. We're tuned into The Bear, of course, my quick synopsis in season four of a show Mike's into. This week's guest, we have Christina Chaloup on. She is an awesome talent, AccuWeather meteorologist, college golfer, and a great personality in her own right. And I got a little taste update and Disney food preview when we always end with food. All of it brought to you by our friends at Desert Fox Golf, makers of the Phone Caddy. We talk about it every week because we love it. It's our go-to accessory. The Phone Caddy puts an easy spin on where you need your phone to be at all times. It's right on the pole in that golf cart. It's a nice, easy, adjustable device to keep your phone safe, keep your yardage apps open, scoring where you need it to be seen, all the important things held, especially your phone, by the Desert Fox Phone Caddy. So check out and go get yours at desertfoxgolf.com. Promo code Course of Life to save 10%. Again, promo code Course of Life to save 10% off your phone caddy at desertfoxgolf.com.
Interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf, Swing Strong, and D3 Golf. I'm Michael. He's Alex. And Alex, it was the 150th Open Championship at the Old Course at St. Andrews, one of the most exciting majors and weeks that come around every few years when it's at St. Andrews, the birthplace of golf. And we all thought this was going to be Rory's week. The Old Course, it certainly looked like it was going to be. But Stewart Cink, Cam Smith, mullet and all, just showed that putting wins championships.
Yeah.
And had, you know, I think the shots of the tournament was maybe Victor Hovland getting the eagle on the road hole. And maybe it was Rory's chip shots. In from the bunker shot on Saturday. But the putt on the road hole by Cam Smith from behind the bunker that set up the up and down for par was just incredible.
Yeah, the flagstick work with Cam Smith all day, just absolutely missiles with the putter when he needed to. He was playing so well from a tee to green standpoint, but the key was the putting stats, like you mentioned. It was 36 putts for Rory on Sunday to Cam Smith's 29, and overall, Cam Smith had 19 less putts than Rory McIlroy, which just goes to show you that you can go ahead and look a ball striker as unbelievable as Rory McIlroy is, firing in all cylinders and shooting 18 under for the week. You can look him dead in the eye and you can outputt him just like Cam Smith did. The short game display was unbelievable from the Aussie.
Yeah, and Rory said in his post-round interview, of course, always the gentleman, no matter what the result is, coming on and giving an interview after the round, said that he's confident where his game is and he was beat by the better player. He certainly was beat by the better player, but that's only because Rory wasn't the better player on Sunday. He was putting well, but not well enough. He had no three putts, right, throughout the entire weekend.
18 greens, Mike. He hit every single green on
Sunday.
He hit
every single green. He just didn't get himself into position close enough, and he burned edges and left putts just short so often. He couldn't buy a putt.
This is the theme of Rory McIlroy's career, and we've always said it, is like if Rory McIlroy could just get a few more putts to drop, he would have fill-in-the-blank majors. You know what I mean? That we have that conversation a lot. We think it maybe doubled the count where he's at right now. So it's just like you surmise thoughts like that. If Rory McIlroy could be just a skosh of a better putter when it mattered the most, and that was on display, unfortunately, Sunday at St. Andrews, the Old Course, at the one he so desperately wanted to win.
Yeah, so Cam Smith, mullet and all, becoming the second mullet to win at St. Andrews.
Of course,
he was in his Hooters pants and all during the week, and it was what you expect out of him. Let's talk about everyone else that was there. Of course, let's talk about the other Cameron Young, who was playing with Cam Smith both days, Saturday and Sunday. Didn't play well to begin the round on Sunday, but played, I mean, and played phenomenally well and drained the putt on 18 to finish in solo second.
A guy that we've been talking about on the Korn Ferry Tour ranks just about a year and change ago, quickly qualified in his rookie year on the PGA Tour for all the biggest tournaments, was at the Dell Match Play in Austin when I saw him, and he has catapulted his way into the top of the world golf ranking with these type of performances. 65 on Sunday, eagle at 18, very clutch stuff. Definitely not the last time we're going to be seeing him.
And Victor Hovland, who surprisingly has never finished in the top 10 in a major, again, was playing with Rory all weekend, just flipping groups with the Camerons from Saturday to Sunday in that final pairing. I think it was just Sunday at a major when you're in the lead for him. He just didn't seem to have anything going for him.
Yeah, and he did need to just get this one under his belt. That had been the knock on Hovland, is that he'd been winning, you know, little time tournaments and on the big stage hadn't really shown his best effort. So he's dispelled that at a great spot to do it at that. So hopefully he takes that with him, notches the first top 10. We'll be seeing more of Victor Hovland at the majors. He just needs to get his experience a little bit more molded throughout the years.
And who we may not see at St. Andrews potentially competitively again is Tiger Woods. A really short week, one of the worst 2 days out of everyone there, which is unfortunately saying something for him. But let's talk about just how his week. He had that start of the week at the Champions Dinner. He did look loose. He looked like he was having a really good time. And then walking up 18 on Friday and crying as he crossed the bridge. What do you think of Tiger's performance? And is this, are his chances spent? Do we think, just even, never mind at St. Andrews, because we know they are. He said it as much. He said he doesn't think he'll be able to physically compete in another British Open at St. Andrews.
Right.
Do we think he has a chance to physically compete at all after what we've seen out of him this year?
And he's saying that with the idea that it's going to be at least minimum 4 or 5 more years before St. Andrews returns into the rotation. And that's TBD as well, too. So, yeah, there's a lot of time between now and then. And yeah, you got to wonder what his playing shape is going to be like. He got 3 events this year. I think we had the over-under. What, we had an over-under conversation at like 3.5 or 4.5 or something like that. When we talked about events played in 2022, I vaguely remember that conversation in our year-end recap. So we'll have to revisit. Doesn't look like there's anything on the calendar in the next couple months immediately for Tiger. I mean, that could change. I don't really think so between now and what, maybe the Hero World and the Father-Son there in December.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect him to do anything until the Father-Son.
Yeah, and maybe Bahamas there, that Hero World Challenge event, maybe as just a little bit of a tune-up or something if he feels right. So this could be the last time we see him for a while. He was very candid about it. This could be the last open at St. Andrews. He didn't quite stop at the bridge on the 18th. He walked over it, which is a bit of a symbolism to say he wants to maybe leave the door open to coming back. But it was a very reflective Tiger. And you mentioned it too. You're enjoying seeing the sentimental side of Tiger, who finally is taking the moment to be semi-human and appreciate the little things.
Yeah, you know, we saw a lot of that new Tiger coming out when he won the Masters a few years ago. You know, that was a moment where when he won the Tour Championship as well. He just became much more reflective and not so much this laser focused, for lack of a better word, Tiger.
The robotic, militaristic Tiger.
Yeah. Right. And he's enjoying life and he's enjoying being out there on the course. You know, part of it, I think, was this change to being, he knew his career was closer to the end than the beginning, and he knew his chances were becoming less and less. I think probably his kids getting older really changed his perspective on golf as well and the importance of it. And, you know, his life has been one of the most tumultuous of any professional athlete out there in terms of being in everyone's good graces to being in everyone's worst graces and back and forth again. So the Tiger who's appreciating life is one that I've really come to enjoy watching. Maybe not so much on the course because he's not able to do as much, but certainly just his perspective and the way he's enjoying the game.
Yeah, and it's a crappy little pillow to land on, but we, again, just have to appreciate the fact that, like, he is still up alive, able, and walking, and that we got to see him at three majors this year. You know, that that's it. You know, when we saw what happened with the accident, not to whole harp on that moment, but when we saw the aftermath of that, to think that we could get this out of him, we absolutely would have signed up for it. So I know Tiger would have as well too. Interesting 2022 campaign for him, albeit as brief as it was. Good to see him out there.
Yep. Let's touch briefly just on all of our picks from the weekend, because you, of course, had Rory. I think my takeaway from this week also is I'm never going to bet Rory again.
He owned your heart for 4 days, doesn't
I'll put money on him for like a top 10, but I don't think I'd put money on him to win.
Top 10 in all four majors for Rory this year, by the way.
Yeah. Which is impressive on its own right that he was able to do that. I also, you know, I didn't have Rory in my picks, but I had Jordan Spieth, who had a, you know, typical Jordan Spieth major weekend. He just never seemed to get anything going.
Yeah, Tommy and then Fleetwood, as always, 5 minutes on Sunday where you think Jordan Spieth might have a chance, always.
And then he makes a bogey and it's all over. So, yeah. And we both had Tommy Fleetwood, who looked good like week. He was going to make a run, but not quite.
Good week. Good week in my picks on runyourpool.com as well. I do a weekly preview that comes out Tuesday there. So check out picks upcoming for this week's 3M Open. But yeah, as far as the open picks, I was leaning in on Fleetwood, and that's a guy that definitely deserves a spot atop a major championship leaderboard soon. He's put himself in enough positions to do it. So that could be around the corner in 2023.
We had also talked last week about which of the LIV golfers we thought would have the best chance of winning. DJ was there all weekend. Not a single mention of him moving to the LIV tournament that I heard during my watch on a Saturday and Sunday.
Thanks for bringing this up. Let's spend 60 seconds on the pettiness between PGA Tour and LIV media and social media last week, because it was a sight to be seen.
Yeah, it was just kind of interesting in general. There was a lot of back and forth. Of course, the RNA came out and said that they don't like the LIV tour. They think it's just a money grab, which it is.
I got all the low lights, by the way, of LIV tour players. I don't know if you caught on to this as the week went on, but when Patrick Reed hit a putt off the green, NBC, very quick to show it. Very, very quick to show it. Our USA Network on Friday showed a couple of low lights. They shove Phil Mickelson on like a midnight tea time, basically, central time for Thursday. Not a lot of pub for Bryson's week, despite making the cut and having a few low rounds. It was very funny to see the pettiness on full display between PGA Tour and LIV Media. LIV had their own separate leaderboard that they were posting on their social media with just their players and nobody else, as if no one else was playing in the tournament, which is that wonderful blindsidedness that we've come to know and love from the LIV Tour so far. So all that was on full display.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting. And then, Cam Smith was actually asked if he was going to go play right after winning the Claret Jug. He asked if he was going to get LIV, and he got a little agitated and said, you know, I just won the Claret Jug. I let my team discuss that things. And there's a lot of rumors. There's a lot of link in him to jump and ship and go into this tournament. What do we think the chances are that now
that was a funky
champion golfer of the year is going to go do this? Because that answer is similar to what we've heard from other guys who have now gone on to the LIV tour.
Yeah, I don't even make these decisions. I don't know why you're asking if I'm going to LIV Tour. I don't even make these decisions. You're going to have to ask somebody else on my team. I love that.
Which is BS. You make your own decisions. I know. Okay.
Yeah. That was a horribly awkward moment there. And yes, it was that same message delivered. So we'll watch for Cam Smith's name in the coming weeks. The one that did drop over the course of these past few days was the rumor surrounding Henrik Stenson, which is an interesting one. He's potentially an upcoming Ryder Cup captain. So him going to LIV, I guess, thwarts that captaincy. I think he's going to kiss captaincy in Italy goodbye then, on that note.
Yeah, I find this interesting that, you know, let Henrik, of all the guys, and maybe I just don't get it, maybe I don't really understand it, but it seems like the Ryder Cup is such a big thing for all these guys. And we especially saw
players of that age too. You're right.
Yeah. We especially saw that from reading Phil, that Mickelson really felt the Ryder Cup was important. He was a big part of changing the U.S. Ryder Cup mentality. And now, of course, all the guys that helped the U.S. win the Ryder Cup in Bryson and Brooks have jumped ship and have gone to LIV. And Phil, who was instrumental in changing the team, has gone to LIV. And now Ryder Cup captain Henrik Stenson for the European team is going to LIV. At least that's what it sounds like. Yeah. At least as of recording here on a Sunday evening, it sounds like it's pretty much a done deal. And he's going to have to give up his captaincy. Wouldn't you want to be captain of a Ryder Cup? I mean, I don't understand.
It is a strange thing to throw away at this moment in his career for all the success he's already had. So we'll follow those LIV rumors and watch who's jumping, who's staying. The Cam Smith rumor is probably going to stay hot for the next week as he celebrates too. Sadly, that's probably going to get thrown over every interview he does this week in celebration of the Open Championship. So we'll watch how that all gets handled. But interesting times during a fascinating Open Championship week.
Let's talk also about the other tournament going on this week, and that is the Barracuda out in Lake Tahoe. Again, we're recording on a Sunday evening because things pop up in our schedules and I have to be recorded at the same time, so it's not over yet. But the most important part of the Barracuda is Mark Baldwin. Yep. And he made the cut. He played the weekend. He's getting diaper money, so good for him.
He did. Yeah, it looks like he's going to finish somewhere just inside the top 50. I checked the purse from last year, and that's about 10K. So maybe it should be more, right? Purse has definitely gone up at the Cuda, right? Yeah. So yeah, it should be more than 10K. So yeah, absolutely. There are lots of diapers being bought this week. There are lots of important bills being paid in the Baldwin household. There are lots of things that are now taken care of that weren't taken care of last week. So shout out to Mark and Ryan for the effort. And this is an automatic PGA Tour events. If you want a fun, really relatable guy to get behind who's going to make the cut at your tournament, give Mark Baldwin a sponsor exemption. That's the moral of the story.
And, you know, I also completely forgot until I looked at the leaderboard on either Friday or Saturday to look at where Mark was in here, that when I looked at the leaderboard, I went, why is everyone at plus 15?
Oh, yeah. This is Stableford.
Stableford. This is very, you know, this is like, maybe the question is this how you make golf more approachable?
This is amazing.
Is this how you grow the game?
Points.
Quote unquote.
It's fun to play for points, isn't it? Everyone loves points. Everyone loves scoring points. Mm-hmm. Scoring points is a little bit easier than calculating a low score. So I give people that. It's a fun idea. I love the format. It's a make birdies format. Mark Baldwin had a 390-yard drive to make a birdie. That's a cool way to score points in golf. So, you know, I appreciate that. I wouldn't mind maybe a couple more of these events on the calendar if we're going to go the points route.
Could be a lot of fun. Yeah. Meanwhile, looking ahead to this next weekend, it's the 3M Open in Minnesota. It's the week after a major. Hey, Ricky is going to be in it. Hideki, Tony Finau.
Yeah. That's a bit. Yeah, that's about it. Mike, when I was writing the preview this week, and I checked for the local paper who's trying to put the best spin they can on the field. Yeah. Okay. I give them all the credit in the world. Sahith Tagala was the leading headline for their field. Now, no offense to Sahith Tagala. He is a fine young man that's making his way on the PGA Tour. But when he is the number one attraction in your entire field, it says a little bit something about the quality. Nonetheless, a PGA Tour event is happening, and we will be watching because it's that like I said in my article on runyourpool.com, Mike, it's that summer grind season. A lot of these guys that are on the cusp of keeping their job, they got about 3-4 tournaments left to make it happen before the playoffs. Yeah,
that's true. And I will say, Thigala tied for 34th at the Open. So
yeah, solid week. I like that.
Good solid week. So we'll have our picks up on Wednesday evening. You'll have your Run Your Pool article up as well on Tuesday, so you can see who to put a buck on. Again, we keep flirting with winners. We just haven't had one in, I don't know, a month and a half, 2 months now, it seems like.
So. Yeah, I've been saying we're due, but I think I'm just going to stop saying that. I'm going to stop throwing that word around. I'm just going to let it happen. Okay.
Yeah, that's all right. Hey, the book club is over. We don't have any edition there, but if you got an idea for a book you think we should read, shoot us a tweet. I'm at MWRINC. Alex is at Course of Life 1 on Twitter. Yep. Let us know.
Let's tune in.
For now, though, let's do Tuned In, where we share what we're tuning into outside of the world of sports. I was really excited this week because one of my favorite TV shows is back, and that is What We Do in the Shadows, Season 4, dropped the first two episodes this week, and it's just as fantastic as it always is.
Nice. Who stars in What We Do in the Shadows? I think you mentioned season 3 previously in the show as well.
Yeah, I've mentioned the show before. I don't remember the names of the actors as much. It doesn't have any big names in it. But it is based on the movie What We Do in the Shadows, written by Taika Waititi and directed and starring Taika Waititi, who has
gone
on to
president of his fan club. That's right.
I am. It seems like I am, at least on the podcast. I am for sure. And this is the Americanized TV show run by Jermaine Clement, who also wrote it with Taika Waititi. So, yeah, it's season four, four vampires sharing a house together in Staten Island.
What could go wrong, right?
I mean, exactly.
If you want to find out, it's what we do in the shadows. Love it. Cool. Season four. And I got on a very trending show, which I know you've heard about. It's been very talked about. I watched The Bear, the FX Netflix drama, I'm going to call it. Some moments of comedy starring Jeremy Allen from Shameless playing Carmen Burzatti. Interesting storyline, but it all centers around, Mike, that life in the kitchen, that back of the house. Restaurant service industry life. If you've done it once in your life, you know it, and you're nodding your head.
You know,
it's like
you know.
To work in the kitchen. It is fast paced. There is a lot of back and forth bickering on the show, and it is full of action, to say the least. It definitely hits all the notes, though, for anyone in the service industry.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about it around the bakery where I am, of course, working now. And let the baker in the show is not very realistic in terms of what he's doing with his bread.
Yes, so. I will get your reaction to that once you flip. Fortunately, it's eight shorties, eight little 30-minute episodes, so you can knock that one out pretty soon. So I'm looking forward to your review on season one.
You'll get it eventually. We'll see when I get to it, but you'll get it eventually. For now, let's get into this week's guest. Alex, we've got a meteorologist for the AccuWeather Network and a former college golfer on this week's show.
Yes, we do.
So a little bit of double whammy. He'll be able to tell us whether or not we need to pack our rain gear, and then is probably going to beat our asses out there on the course.
Absolutely. And I asked Christina about not only her golf game, but the myths that we think about with meteorologists and like what we think versus like what's actually going on behind the camera. You've got a little bit of an idea from your news production past, but a really fun conversation with Christina, and she's a great personality to have on the show. So definitely stay tuned for this one.
But first, let's talk about our favorite and official on-course betting app of the course of life. That is, of course, D3, dollar, dollar, dollar. It's the best way to play with your friends no matter where they are in the U.S. and put a little money down on the game. And you can play one day and they can play another day so that if there's weather that pops up because they saw it pop up on AccuWeather and they know they can't play on the same day as you, that's okay. They can play on a different day and you guys can still play for money.
That's absolutely true. Yeah, we love the D3 golf app, so be sure to download today. You can check us out, Alex or Michael. You can check me out, Course of Life Alex. Be sure to put in code COL when you download the app and get going and sign up and challenge us. We will play a real match for money. We'll play a dollar-dollar match. You play your course, I play mine. We compare our handicaps. The strokes get added up accordingly. They get divvied out, and we play for real money that goes into your accounts. So check out the D3 golf app today. Download and let's play. Next up on the tee, we have a senior broadcast meteorologist at AccuWeather TV who is a self-proclaimed washed-up college golfer. We'll get to that. Her content is very funny on or off the course. We have Christina Schallhoop joining us. Christina, thanks for hopping on. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. This is going to be so fun.
Definitely. I could tell already from doing a little bit of research for our conversation that we have a lot in common. First off, you're in a very safe space talking sports. We both have a Boston sports background. Your background's taken you all over, but we kind of grew up in the similar area. What are your fondest memories of growing up in Massachusetts?
I mean, first of all the cool kids are from Massachusetts, obviously. So, right. You know, so glad we have that in common. you know, I love it so much. I love New England on the whole. You know, kind of an odd little thing. I was actually born in Rochester, New York, but my dad's family is from Andover, Massachusetts.
Okay.
He lived there his whole life until he moved to Rochester. And when I was a little kid, he was like, you know what? We're going back home to Massachusetts. We're taking the family and we're going. So I really spent essentially my whole childhood in Massachusetts. I love it so much. I love New England. It is just, there's something for everybody, you know? And honestly, you know what? I take it back. There's something for everybody except people who want 80 degrees in the winter. You are out of luck if that's what you're looking for. But I love sports. I was a figure skater for a long time. I love to ski. So for me, I mean, Massachusetts just has everything, you know? I love
Yeah, and I love it there too. I'll say I'm in Austin, Texas, because I'm just the golf guy, but I can tell that you are the ski girl and the golf girl too. So that's why you work really well 12 months out of the year there. And I saw that you even got to visit my hometown as well, where I grew up, Concord, Massachusetts, which I like to say to everyone is basically cut out of a Hallmark movie. But what do you enjoy most about spending time there and enjoying the history of Concord?
First of all, that is so funny that you say that, because that's actually how I described it. So when I went there, my husband's never been there, and I went just to visit my parents, and he had to work, so he couldn't go. And when I got on the phone with him that day, that's exactly how I described Concord. It's like you're out of a Hallmark movie. It is the most beautiful, historic town. Oh, what was the name? You're going to know this. I don't know it. I forget. The beautiful inn that was like a stagecoach inn way back in the day. And you can go.
Well, there's the Colonial Inn downtown, maybe you're thinking of.
I think that's what I'm thinking of. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Went and had lunch there, walked around. It was fabulous. The food was great. The history is wild. I mean, if you're a history buff, New England is just, I mean, it's where the country essentially started. So
yeah, you can do the full transplant back to 1776. It's something. Yeah. It's very neat. It's a neat stoppage in time. And I love that I grew up there. It was neat to see that you visited as well too. So I guess kind of with the nature of where you grew up in a similar spot to me, in that you grew up with a lot of different weather and a lot of different severe weather. And it's something that we saw on TV as a kid, from nor'easters with school cancellations to thunderstorm summers. How do you think that maybe shaped, you know, where your career is now?
So it's definitely helped me figure out which parts of meteorology I love the most. Like my career story, brace yourself for this one. My career story is a little weird, and honestly, it's a little bit long, so I don't know much how
it is. We'll touch on as much of it as we can in 20 minutes here. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. It's a little wild. So I actually, I went to NYU. I had no idea what I was going to study. I just kind of stumbled into media, and I was like, you know what, this is kind of fun. And I actually wanted to be a sports writer for a long time. And I ended up working, you know, in different realms of the golf industry for a while, as, you know, someone in media and sports for a while. And then I worked for the Golf Channel for a few years. And while I was there, one of my mentors was like, you know what, you have so much energy, we just have to stick you in front of the camera and see what happens. I was like, all right, cool. Sounds fun to me. So they started training me for, it was a digital college talk show that they were doing online. And, you know, I was not good. I had no idea what I was doing. I'd never worked in TV. So long story short, you know, they thought I had a lot of potential. I was 21 years old. I had no idea what I was doing. So they were like, look, if this is actually what you want, we think we could see you here, but why don't you go anchor the news in some tiny town in the middle of nowhere and then come back to us? And I was like, all right, cool. Sounds good to me. So I went to Washington State, got a job as an anchor. And on my first day, my boss was like, you have so much energy, you're going to do the weather. And I was like, I'm going to do the what? And she was like, yeah, you're going to do the weather. And she was like, I'm not a meteorologist, you know that, right? And she was like, yeah, you'll figure it out though. I was like, okay, cool, I guess. So that's how I got started in meteorology. And growing up in Massachusetts, I mean, I die for snow. I love snow. I feel like I am I'm golf obsessed. I've played my whole life. And yet here I am. I can't wait for winter. You know, I feel like it's fun because I have to have somewhere with four seasons. And for me, Massachusetts was just that place. It was awesome growing up there, where I can go make snow angels in the winter and then go play golf in the spring and summer. So I love that it shaped my particular love for weather, especially in an industry where I really didn't know where I was going. I at least knew what I liked to forecast, and that was a really good start.
Very cool. Nice. And I know obviously you got a lot of that experience through your education as well too. I want to talk about where you went, and you grew up in the Boston area, but went to NYU for college and kind of probably experienced city life, but also that opportunity, like I said, to be a washed up college golfer. Tell me a little bit about your education there, but also I want to hear about the highlights of being on the golf team.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if this is just a pattern for me. Maybe it is, but it was kind of the same thing when I was choosing a college, because I didn't know, you know, my mom is a teacher. I grew up very academic, very, you know, education heavy. You know, I had science homework over the summer. That
oh
kind
boy.
Of thing.
Wow.
Oh yeah. My mom was, you know what? And I'll give her this. She did well, because I, you know, have pretty successful. I was pretty successful academically. So I was looking for a school, and I was like, you know what? do I want to go to school to play golf or do I want to go to school just to go to school? And I was in kind of a weird place because I was good enough to play for some teams, but I was most certainly not good enough to play for some of the teams that academically maybe I could have gotten into the school, you know?
Right.
So NYU came along, and NYU is funny. They are, it's a D3 program. Back in the day, it actually used to be D1, but if I remember correctly, they got caught in a cheating scandal in basketball in the 70s. And,
oh, okay. Wow.
And the punishment was to be bumped down to D3. So, you know, but it's an odd little program because even as a D3 program, they really treat it like a D1 program. They really do. And, you know, I was looking at schools. I had never been to New York City at that point, which is wild because my mom's from Long Island and grew up in the city for most of her life. And I went on my recruiting trip and I, first of all, loved the coach. He is still one of my great friends to this day. And I stepped foot in the city and I was like, oh, I have to be here. I have to go here. This is it. This is where I'm going to school. And it worked out. You know, they recruited me for the team. I loved the city. I loved living in New York. And it was perfect for me because I got out of the city to go compete and to go practice and go play every day, that I wasn't overwhelmed by New York. But at the same time, you know, I got to go to Chelsea Piers for practice and go hit balls out over the Hudson River every week. Like,
very neat. I didn't think about those hidden perks about NYC golf. You usually think of it as kind of a prison, but it was anything but for you, I guess.
It was awesome. It was great. And you know what? If anything, it was a lot of organization because, you know, since you're living in the city, we practiced every day with our men's team and we all left at the same time. We had like 3 sprinter vans that we essentially took to practice every day and just everyone piled in, took their clubs and went. And if you missed it, you missed it. And then you were obviously in trouble. So, you know, it was a lesson in organization, to say the least, for someone like me who can be a little scatterbrained sometimes. But it was great. I mean, I really felt like I got the best of both worlds. I got to go compete all the time. I was the captain for 3 years, I think. Oh my gosh. It's been a few years since college. That is terrifying.
Yeah, it's okay. We don't have to look that far back. No big deal.
Yeah, exactly. But it was great for me. I learned so much. I got to compete and travel and oh gosh, I wouldn't trade it for the world. It was the most wonderful experience.
Very cool. Yeah, I saw a lot of neat lineage within your career, both golf and meteorology, and they seemed to go hand in hand. And it was neat to look up the different opportunities that you had. Talking about all the different markets that you've been in, I can tell you've already had the experience of a broadcaster and that you've seen lots of different markets. What's maybe been the most unique market or city to work and or forecast in so far that you've been in?
Hands down, when I was in Washington State. So it was my first job. And to preface, so most meteorologists, all meteorologists are certified or degreed. So after my first job, I went back to school in Mississippi State and got my certification. So nice. I could be an actual meteorologist, not just a forecaster is what we'd call someone who doesn't have that. And it was funny because Washington was perfect because I was in Eastern Washington, which if you've never been there, or for anyone listening who's never been there, it is not like what you see on a postcard. It looks absolutely nothing like Seattle. The Cascade Mountains divide Washington and Oregon more or less in half, a little bit less than half, and everything east, you get what we call the rain shadow effect. So essentially all the moisture condenses up the mountains. You get crazy rain and snow on the west side, but on the leeward side of the mountains, all the moisture is gone. So it's more or less like almost like a high desert kind of climate that it's brown and dry and there are no trees and it's just a weird kind of beauty that's hard to describe.
Definitely different from the postcard, I imagined. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Because I mean, when you say Washington, everyone's like, oh, Seattle, evergreens, right? Well, yeah. Not always, you know? And so for me, this was perfect because I mean, forecasting out west is just a different animal because of the geography. The topography is just so, it's wild. It is just so wildly different from anything you'll see in the eastern half of the country. So for me, that was very fun. You still get, even in eastern Washington, the mountainous terrain, which is really interesting. You get all these microclimates, which is great. But at the same time, in eastern Washington, you get like 320 days of sunshine a year. It's amazing. Wow. Oh, it is. And I mean, talk about perfect golf weather. It's really great. You know, you still get a winter, But that's kind of it. Winter happens. It's not the worst in terms of being cold. It snows a little bit. And then the rest of the year, it's just sunny. It's awesome. So I think that's definitely it for me in terms of the most interesting place. And like, I look back on it so fondly. I really do.
Yeah, that's a very cool experience talking about Washington State specifically there and its weather patterns. Let's go through something that you post a lot about in your content on Instagram mainly. It's Christina Shalhoop, Shalhoup. Let's run through quickly some of the biggest myths of being a meteorologist and what our preconceived notions are on the other side of the TV screen versus what's actually going on there when you're broadcasting.
Oh, I love this. You really did your homework. This is one of my favorite things to talk about because there are, and you know what, as someone who had no intention of being in this industry, it is crazy the things you learn that, you know, I mean, first of all, I think one of the things I just mentioned is something I'm going to mention again, that if you are a meteorologist, you are a degreed scientist. You know, I had to go all the way back to school for it. And it is not easy. It is very difficult. You're learning about, you know, thermodynamics and, you know, all it's a very interesting process. So anyone who is, I would say there are people who are on TV in certain markets around the country where you do not have to be a meteorologist. You can be a forecaster. Right. But that is the difference. You will not be called a meteorologist. You'll be called a forecaster. And there's nothing wrong with that because there are some markets where, look, you can figure it out. And that's exactly what I did in Washington. But I think that's myth number one. Number two is I always get the like, oh, so who tells you the weather? It's like, no, I tell me the weather. You know, I study the models. I look at the, you know, patterns in the atmosphere, climatology, and, you know, I come up with my own forecast. Now, at AccuWeather, it is a little different. It's a national network. So we actually have teams of operational forecasters. Since AccuWeather is such a huge company, we have fabulous operational forecasters who essentially come up with the AccuWeather forecast and we lean into them every morning. But like, I'm still looking at models every day. Right. Next thing is, this is another one of those that I, you know, it's so funny. It always, I get this question from everyone, like, who does your hair and makeup? Me. I do my hair and makeup. And not just meteorologists, but broadcasters. I mean,
Oh, so you're not sitting in a beauty chair for 2 hours every morning, just flipping through your phone?
It would be fabulous. It would really be nice. Honestly, I would probably just fall asleep in the chair. Yeah, I know anyone who is in local TV, I would say, except for, oh gosh, I don't even know anymore, any markets that still have hair and makeup people, but
you mean unless they're paying for their own. Yeah.
unless they are truly, at this point, it's really just some of the national networks, but there are some that don't. I mean, AccuWeather is a national network and we do, you know, have makeup and hair and wardrobe consultants, but we do everything ourselves. So that's another one that I think is just, that one always cracks me up. Like, wow, it must be so glamorous. And I'm like, no, like I'm not really great at, I've never been a super girly girl. So I've really had to learn a lot. It was so intimidating, Alex. Oh my gosh. It was really intimidating.
Yeah. He definitely warmed up to it over time. I can tell. And yeah, these are all kind of the funny things that we can follow on Instagram. Again, it's Christina Shalhoup joining us on Course of Life. Let's get to some golf content, which you also post a lot of as well. Cause I took note of some neat spots and places that you've been in the world of golf. Let's talk about Arizona. One of my favorite states to visit that I've been to a few times for golf purposes. You got to play some awesome desert golf out there. But the one thing I need to ask about is whose idea was it to break out the noise track when you played the 16th hole at TPC Scottsdale? Cause that was a genius idea. That was some next level thinking. So I just wanted to get the background on that.
It was either my husband or it was, so we did a buddy's trip. It was me, my husband, and two of his best friends from childhood, who I'm now incredibly close with. They're great guys. And I want to say it was our friend Bill. It might have been him. It was either him or my husband. And honestly, it was perfect. It was so fun. Scottsdale was a blast. That made it feel so much more real. It was awesome. It was so fun.
How did you do on 16 there?
So I hit the green.
And that counts. Okay. That's fine. Yeah, the crowd got you. It's okay. You hit the green, though. That's what matters.
Yeah, it's the pressure from the fans, you know?
One other cool spot that I noted was you golfed through a herd of sheep, which I can't say I've ever done. I don't know if a lot of people out there have. Where was that? And did they eventually let you play through?
you know, the sheep were pretty nice guests. I appreciated that. It's the Hermitage course. So Hermitage has two courses. It's in Tennessee, in Hermitage, Tennessee. And what is it? It's the President's and the General are the two courses. That one's the President's course. And their lawnmowers are sheep. And it's awesome. It is the coolest thing. I played there probably, I would say, 20 times while I was living in Nashville. And hands down my favorite course, immaculately kept. And I have to thank the sheep for that, to be honest.
Fascinating.
Great layout. Greens are always super fast, which I personally really like. I cannot recommend it enough. It's awesome.
What do you think is your favorite state to play in, if you could just pick one state to golf?
Oh, that's a good one. I think it's going to be a toss-up between Arizona. I'm actually going back to Arizona this fall for like an 8-day trip, and we're going to go play. But I cannot wait.
Nice. Have you been to the Saguaro course at Wecopa?
No, that's actually one of the ones on my list. I think we're going to
hit that. That's the one I say to everybody when they're heading there. So.
Okay, cool. So, okay, this is good. I need recommendations because I've only played like 3 courses out there. So this will be good. We'll go down the list. I would say it has to be... Oh gosh, that's hard. Yeah, probably Arizona. Maybe, I don't know if it counts because I've only played one course there, but maybe Idaho.
Okay.
Or maybe, honestly, I've got to put Massachusetts in there. You know, New England golf is just fun.
There's a lot. I mean, between the North Shore and Cape Cod, it's like 2 different worlds of golf.
I love playing on the Cape. It is so fun. Highly recommend. Or you know what? No, I take it back. Massachusetts is great, but I'm going to throw Rhode Island up there first. Rhode Island, I think, might be number one.
Yes. Good shout out to Rhode Island golf as well, too. And I guess in terms of attending events, that's a great segue. I attended a really cool event back in the day, which was the U.S. Women's Open at Newport Country Club in Rhode Island, like right on the water there. That was a long time back, but I'm curious, you've attended a lot of different major tournaments. What's maybe your most notable or favorite tournament you've attended?
First of all, maybe I may or may not have seen you at that tournament way back in the day because I was also there.
Yes, we walked right by each other a distant 17 years ago, I imagine, right?
Yeah, exactly. Maybe we just didn't know it, but also played Newport Country Club. Got lucky enough to get on there maybe like 6 or 7 years back. Oh my gosh, that course is amazing. It absolutely kicked my butt. Best event. So I worked for the RNA for 3 years. I went, it was maybe the coolest experience of my life. So I actually got to work at the Open Championship for 3 summers in a row. So they would ship me off to England or Scotland, wherever it was in the prospective year. And I would just work as a part of their media team for like 2.5 weeks. And it was the coolest experience of my whole life. I would say of the 3 years that I did it, the first year was Lytham St. Anne's, the second was Muirfield, and the third was Liverpool. And I want to say probably Lytham St. Anne's just because it was my first year there. And I have a hard time comparing anything to that event. It was just fabulous. Ernie Els won in a wild upset. Adam Scott choked. It was hard to watch him do that. But I mean, Ernie Els is awesome. Who doesn't love a big easy? So it was really fun.
Yeah, those open setups are amazing. As our audience is listening to this, we had just had the Open Championship at St. Andrews, which is always an epic week as well, too. So definitely a good call out for great events you've attended. All right, let's get to some quick shot questions before we wrap up. These are just rapid fire, real quick answers that don't take much thought at all here. Let's start with a quick Boston sports question. Mac Jones, year 2 for the Patriots. Do you think it's going to be better, worse, or about the same as last year?
I think better.
Okay. All right. And then Gary Player put you in a headlock. How did you get out of it?
He was just nice enough to let me go.
He's a strong fellow because that's on his timeline. I know he can do like 500 push-ups or sit-ups every morning. So
it was actually kind of shocking. I was like, oh my God, like, what do I do? Am I excited about this or am I nervous because he's so strong? No, he was great.
Nice. And ideal temperature to play golf in? What number? Degrees?
60 on the dot.
Like it. And our final question, before we get to the 19th hole question, your first or second hole in one, which one was cooler?
Oh, definitely my second.
What made it cooler than the first one? Was it blind? Did you have a blind one where you didn't see it go in? Did I see that right?
It wasn't. So the hole wasn't blind, but I had no idea it went in. The first one I knew, it was also an easier hole and not as exciting. It was just during a practice round, just one day. The second one, I had no idea it went in. Course was gorgeous. Hole was gorgeous. Got up to it. And I was like, oh man, that's cool. Great surprise. Surprise everyone loves.
Yeah, best one, best surprise in the game. Again, it's our 19th hole question that we wrap every conversation with. So when you get into your favorite clubhouse and you sit down after a great round, what is your go-to order for a meal and a drink in the 19th hole?
Great question. Drink is going to be, honestly, the meal I'm having a harder time with. Drink is going to be either a just whatever bourbon of choice on the rocks or a whiskey sour if I'm feeling something a little fruitier.
Yep.
Meal is probably going to be, I'm going to go some sort of sandwich, grilled cheese, tomato soup kind of situation, probably depending on how hot it is.
That's nice. That definitely goes with the 60 degree New England golf vibe right there. I could tell by that order.
Yeah, that's absolutely it.
Your roots definitely shine through. Christina, thanks again for hopping on the Course of Life. Again, everyone follow Christina on all the socials and check out her AccuWeather TV forecasts. Thank you for hopping on and hit them straight.
Oh, thank you so much. That goes right back at you. I appreciate it.
And we're back. Great chat there with Christina. You know, she said that around 60 degrees is her ideal temperature for golf. I'd have to say for me, I'm probably in the high 60s, low 70s. I don't want to have to wear a sweater or a jacket. I want it like just warm enough where I don't need one.
Yes, and I'm a grown adult and you are too. We're in decent enough shape that we can wear shorts on a golf course and we don't look ridiculous. So shout out to us for being that great. So my temperature, unfortunately, has gone up because now I'm 12 years deep in Texas in
the heart of the heat. Your blood's thinned out a
bit. Honestly, I think my ideal temp is like heading towards like 78, 80 degrees, which is admittedly pretty high. Like I can stand a lot lower, but geez, I like it hot these days. So I'm going towards 78 or 80.
My biggest thing that I would like when I'm playing around a golf is for it to not be humid.
Yeah.
And that's impossible in Savannah.
Yes. You're not in a great part of the country for that. Yeah, the humidity. And then if I could turn one thing off, it would be that Texas breeze. Just turn it off. Just so I just need a calm shot for my seven iron. I need to stand a chance.
I want a breeze, just not when I'm hitting it. I don't want a stiff breeze.
I just want to turn it off for about 5 seconds, about 20 or 30 times a day. That's all.
Yeah, there you go.
Great chat there with Christina. Be sure to subscribe if you love that interview or anything else you're hearing right now. We'll give you a moment to click subscribe wherever you're listening. Thank you for tuning in.
Breaking news, Alex. Like we've said, we're recording this on a Sunday evening. The Yankees have just completed their pounding of the Red Sox.
Oh, God.
12-2 today.
Just a horrible way to go into the All-Star game for the Red Sox.
Taking 2 out of 3 here after winning 14-1 on Saturday. You know, the Red Sox got one on Friday on winning in extra innings on a passed ball.
Just barely.
But the Yankees said, nope, we still the best.
I mean, the Red Sox need a full reset after All-Star break here. And I'm very pessimistic, but some sort of move needs to be made, on the bullpen end. We need more arms between innings 5 through 8. It's just absolutely despicable the way they give up runs. And I mean, they're not going to hang with the Yankees, but we're just trying to hang into that wild card spot right now. And even that's becoming a question at this point. So a lot of adjustments need to be made in the second half.
Yeah. Red Sox go in fourth place in the AL East, like 16 and a half games back of the Yankees. So
brutal.
Yeah. Let's hashtag always end with food.
Yes, time to ditch the traditional sports and energy drinks. Be sure to hydrate with Swing Strong Hydrate. I love using it on the course. You add it easily into water. It's like a wonderful mix of Gatorade and Red Bull without any of the jitters or energy shakes at all that you despise. It keeps you locked in, loaded, ready to go, and most importantly, hydrated. So then check out Swing Strong, getswingstrong.com for yours today. Unfortunately, Mike, mine is a weird one because it's a little bit of a taste update for me. Breaking news, I have COVID.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I mean, we're literally doing a COVID podcast right now as we speak. Fortunately, I'm on the mends. I'm in that mode where I'm symptom-free but still testing positive, so fortunate for that.
Did you lose your sense of taste and smell?
But there are moments when I have in the last couple of days, which was part of the update. The banana in the morning, just not really hitting. It's already kind of bland as is, but the coffee just tastes a little watery. Spices aren't really coming through. And then... you know, it's just, I don't know. It's not gone, but it's disintegrated at the moment. So I certainly hope this is something that comes back to full vitality. But that was the interesting food update for my COVID journey.
I will say that's, to me, the most terrifying potential symptom of getting COVID is losing that sense of taste or smell.
Yeah, I purposely got some spicy tacos, and those did come through. Like, I got the spicy is salsa on them. I got the spicy meat, and unfortunately, that came through loud and clear. So that passed the test, at least.
Yeah. Well, I hope to have my taste buds in full working order, because this week we're celebrating while a month behind, the wife and I are celebrating our fifth wedding anniversary.
Congrats. Yeah.
Thank you. And we're doing it at the happiest place on earth. We're going to Disney World.
All right. So Disney food, you must have some sort of plan for what you're going to hit at Disney, right?
Well, we have some reservations set up, because you kind of need to plan your time and make dinner reservations.
Yeah.
So we're driving down Tuesday. We're going to be in Disney Springs on Tuesday. We're going to the CityWorks Eatery and Poorhouse. We'll report on that.
Sounds nice.
Wednesday, we'll be in Hollywood Studios. And we're going to go to the Star Wars area. So I'll let you know how that is. And we'll have dinner at the 50s Primetime Cafe. And then Thursday, Magic Kingdom. You know, I'm probably going to get a Mickey Mouse shaped ice cream, something or other.
Oh, delightful. Yes.
And then for dinner, we're doing the Jungle Navigation Company Limited Skipper Canteen Diner, which I hear is really good. So we'll see how that is, too.
Oh, yeah. You guys got it all planned out. Well done. Nice work. Okay. That's a great little Disney itinerary there for anyone making the travel as well, too. Little three-night plan action for dinners there. Mm-hmm. Good stuff.
Yep.
All right. Content to come there. Check out Course of Life. Alex on IG. MWRINC is Mike, and COL Podcast, as well as Always End with Food Pod for our food content, too. Everyone have a fantastic week, and we'll see you next week.